It's May 6th, 2009.
And this is Idle Thumbs 28?
7?
7?
6?
5.
4.
3.
2.
And this is the final countdown.
It's May 6th, 1316.
And this is Idle Thumbs 27. Oh, and I'm Chris Remo.
Oh, I'm Nick Reckin.
And I'm Jake Rodkin.
Nick is always so enthusiastic to ape whatever I say.
Yeah.
Anyway, also, we've got here Steve with us. Fuck! Well, today we have Steve Gaynor here, who's hot scoops and we like him.
All right.
I like you guys, too.
We've got Steve with us, who is hot scoops.
Hey, man.
This
why would I deny it?
Beamed live from another land.
Yeah. Oh,
this
anyway.
This is the grammar episode.
It's true. That's what they say.
I'm happy to
Steve,
be here.
You emailed me today and said you had an idea for how we could get an idea for how to do this episode.
Oh, I think, yeah, in that email I said we should look at our mail to see if readers have any ideas for how to do this.
That's a great idea. Episode. Let's look at the reader mail.
All right.
See what the reader mails us. So our first one is from Nick Breedon, who writes, "Dear Idle Thumbs, you should do an episode that consists entirely of reader mail and baboos. Sincerely, Nick Breedon, sent from Bangladesh." The signature says, "Nick Brecken, editor, Shack News Limited." So, that's a good idea.
Thanks, Nick Breedon.
That sounds great.
Yeah, we
should I agree. We should do that.
All right.
So, let's...
A little off-the-cuff episode
here. That was some productive reader mode.
Yeah, I know.
Man, we got right moving right on to the next one. The next one is from Jake Rodkin, who writes, "Is Hot Scoops on this week? If so, I have a question for him. Hey, Scoops, you said Nick wrote something on Shack News today. Any thoughts on that? Bird noise, Jake."
Wait, does he mean Nick Breedon or Nick Brecken?
Oh, I meant Nick Brecken, editor, Shack News Limited.
Oh, okay. Yeah, there was an awesome thing I read, and it involved the former EA Redwood Shores.
Yeah.
Care to tell us about it, Nick Brecken?
Yeah, no, what is this? You guys were laughing about it earlier. So
yeah,
I wrote
Jake
in.
Is the only one that is not in the know.
Redwood Shores renamed themselves to Visceral Games today.
Is it EA Visceral Games?
No,
it's just Visceral Games.
EA Redwood Shores.
Yes.
Well, not the whole building, but just the specific team.
Oh,
yeah,
that,
the Sims
like the
are
development
not
team
games,
that yeah, right. But, the yeah, team that made Dead Space and is making Dante's Inferno now Visceral Games.
Yep.
So,
I mean, it's nice that they're naming themselves something that isn't EA Redwood Shores.
Yeah.
Too bad they went with "It Will Blow You Away."
Games.
The productions.
Yeah. It is Visceral.
The press release about it was pretty amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Something about it's in our blood and DNA.
Oh, yeah.
And,
it's in our blood is actually in the logo for their studio.
Yes. Yeah.
It's
in our blood. Blood.
Visceral
it's
Games.
In game. It's in our blood.
Yeah. I hope that says that at the beginning of all their
it's
games.
It's in our blood.
EA Visceral Games. It's in our blood. That'd be pretty sweet.
They just get the EA Sports guy to say it for them. That would be awesome.
Yeah.
It's gross.
Well, party pooper. yeah, I don't know. On that note, speaking of the Visceral Games guys, I have to bring up, I think pretty much all you, I think actually I've seen it, the spot from the Jason Hall show.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah, when they toured the Dante's Inferno.
This shit is just like a double whammy.
Yeah.
To come within days
coming
of each
within
other.
Days? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it was the video that validated your hilarious, like, repeat dumping on that game a little bit, maybe.
I feel kind of
or completely.
If you haven't seen it, you can look it up on YouTube.
I felt a little guilty and was shuffling around when you were dumping on that game, but then I saw that video.
It's got tits.
Yeah, the video was pretty outstanding. Just they went and they visited them, and there was like an executive producer who was doing the like, you know, well, it's inspired by the poem,
right?
And we really want to explore the
themes.
Yeah,
but that shit, you really just want to blow everything up.
we made it badass. Yeah. Yeah. It's got gore. It's got boobs.
Yeah, the EP the on that
the
game.
The poor girl sitting next, like, between yeah, the two guys.
There was
guys,
this female like, producer, yeah, like, in between
yeah, was,
them.
There was yeah, three people in a row on this couch talking to this web show. The executive producer who kept talking about how yeah. it's based on the literary masterworks.
Like, and then
the lead gameplay designer. Yeah, just be like, and it's got tits. Like, who? And he was like, he maybe thought he was being a little ironic or like showing off. I don't think he wasn't.
I kind of got that feeling too, because Jace Hall is like that.
Right.
Like,
except that they have. But what it actually was doing was just pulling away the veil of what is actually happening.
Yeah, because it was either staged and it was kind of like a like vaudeville comedy team thing.
Right.
Because like yeah, the lead designer just kept interrupting, and like when the guy was talking about the poem, the lead designer just interjected and was like, whatever, nobody's read that. Maybe we looked at the cliff notes. Yeah. Just, there's blood and tits. That's what we want. And it's like, what? And then the executive producer's like, well, but you know, and it was just like hilarious.
The thing that made me think it wasn't a setup is that there was that other producer in the middle who didn't really know what to do.
Right.
She's just kind of hanging out and kind of like occasionally she'd tack on a rider to the end of a sentence or something.
Sadly, she unfortunately had to be the person that said that like the breasts in the game were tasteful.
Right.
Right. Exactly.
Like, wow. And then the other day I was like oh, yeah, boobs are tasty was the reply.
Yeah. Jesus Christ.
So that happened.
Dante's Inferno. So, you know, it's probably visceral.
Whatever you think that it's. That it was sort of an act, they would then start showing concept art of like...
Oh, the Lust Minion.
The Lust Minion.
Right, the Lust Minion.
Yeah, anyway, the Lust Minion.
Yeah, which is a naked woman with a sort of gory orifice on the middle of her torso, like, and they and the footage they showed of like the studio visit was they were looking at the model in like 3DS Max or whatever, and you know, you could see the vertices on it and everything. The lead designer was like, make the boobs bigger, yeah. And then the executive producer was like, no, we want to be tasteful. And, like, the artist was pulling on his mouse to make the boobs larger and smaller. Yeah.
I don't even think I noticed that part.
Oh, right. That's right after.
I might have obscured the video with an IM window to talk about the ridiculousness of the video.
I know it's that far. Yeah.
As I got about a third of the way through, I was already sending it to Jake and being like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah. So it either confirms all assumptions or is like a brilliantly straight-faced piece of self-parody. It's kind of impossible.
Who thinks that's rad, though? Like, who, you know what I mean? Like, what audience?
What, you mean the unironic version or the ironic version?
Either one.
The unironic version is probably the millions of people who are going to buy it.
But
and
if
they're
it
the
shows
ones
up and it actually is
sweet.
An adaptation of the epic poem, and this video is just like,
yeah,
that would be pretty sweet. I'd
that would be amazing. I'd give them credit for that.
It won't happen.
It's not gonna happen though, so it doesn't really matter. So you know, whatever.
So amazing thing. I don't know. I don't quite understand what the Jace Hall show is. Like, it's just like a little
just Jason Hall hanging out. I guess.
Studios.
Yeah,
he's funded by Sony Pictures, and so he does a lot of stuff with like Sony owned studios and PlayStation stuff. And, but I mean, ostensibly it's like a multi-platform thing. But he ends up doing Sony stuff pretty much every episode. It seems.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Like Sony movies or specifically like PlayStation.
So he did that episode he did with Sony Pictures Television and then Sony Online Entertainment.
Yeah.
And,
so he's just a web show that they're just making ad money off of or whatever.
I guess so. Okay. Yeah. I don't really know what the business model is, but I assume that's what it is. It's a strange thing. I don't really know of anyone else doing that.
Yeah.
Yep. And he was the founder of Monolith Studios and stuff.
Exactly.
Just like crazy. So anyway, any more reader mail?
I'm sorry. Just on that note, it was interesting actually because
the only one
they went to Monolith, and it was interesting to see because he was talking to Craig Hubbard, who is the I guess main creative director at Monolith, and I guess Jason Hall like picked Craig Hubbard to be the designer on Shogo, and so I thought that was an interesting just like little tidbit. Not that it's relevant to anything we were talking about, but just I don't know. I thought that was kind of cool because Craig Hubbard's a pretty cool guy.
Yeah,
and it was interesting to see that little piece of knowledge.
Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah,
a weird turn of events.
Yeah, it is.
Like 15 years later or 10 years later, however.
Yeah, probably good. At least 10. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see. What else do we have here? Jake Rodkin writes, Jesus. Dear Chris,
did that guy write two this week?
Yeah, this guy, Jake Rodkin, wrote two emails. Huh. Dear Chris, I remember you saying you were playing Xenoclash and wanted to talk about it. Is that true? Keep it up. Love the cast. Jake, P.S. the Wizard. P.P.S. Let's also talk about Chinatown Wars.
All right. Well, which do you think we should talk about first?
Well, Xenoclash, because he asked about it first.
Mm. Yeah.
We've got to stick to the reader mail this episode.
Okay. And then the Wizard. And then
and then the Wizard.
All right.
And then a great cast. or
I think Greatcast comes before the Wizard.
Yeah, I think you're right.
All right.
So,
Zeno,
we definitely haven't gotten to the Greatcast yet.
No.
Yeah.
Zeno.
Yeah. Steve and I actually played several hours of this, sort of trading back and forth on over the weekend.
Yeah, we were over at my place.
Yeah,
handing a keyboard and mouse back and forth.
Yep.
Punching weird creatures and men and women.
I believe they're called Xenos. Actually, I don't think they are.
You were clashing with Xenos?
Yeah. I was reading like on their blog, and the weird thing is that like that universe was created in prior like mods and stuff. Like,
oh, I read that. That's
interesting. Yeah, yeah.
I didn't know that.
This is what I found out is that the Xeno and Xeno Clash comes from the word Xenozoid, which is the name of like the world that it all takes place in.
Yeah. Crazy.
It has like backstory.
That kind of reminds me of the Gravity Bone, which is technically a subtitle to Citizen Able, which is
right.
A bunch of mods that Brennan Chung used to make in like
Quake
and
1
Quake 2 and stuff.
Yeah.
And this one doesn't really have anything to do with them in a meaningful way, other than it started out as kind of part of that series, and eventually has diverged so much that it was sort of its own thing. But he still kept that name on there.
Yeah,
which I thought was kind of interesting.
Yeah. So yeah, Xeno Clash in the here and now is this cool game that's made with the Source Engine and it's being distributed on like Steam and other download services.
Drive.
And
nice.
It's basically a first-person brawler like arena fighting game set in this really weird, crazy-looking world. That was made by a really small team. It's like an independent game.
Yeah.
And
it's like an independent game.
It's similar to one.
Is it an indie game?
Yes. So anyway, yeah. I don't know about you, Chris. No, you pre-ordered it like before it came out whatever.
I got it for $10.
I waited until they made a demo, and I played the demo because you know, like I don't know, I was kind of unsure of it before that. Yeah. Like it looked incredibly cool.
Yeah, right.
But you know, like and from the gameplay videos, it looked like it could be fun. But then when I actually played the demo, I was like, shit, I have to buy this. And
then you did.
Yeah. And I played it and nice. It's really great. Have you guys played it or are Chris and I the only ones that have
played it? I played it for like about 3 hour. Seconds at IGF.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm like maybe halfway through it.
Yeah.
You played for an hour and you're halfway through?
Maybe I'm more like 2 hours and I don't know. I'm like
I've played it for like well maybe I don't know how far.
My time logged was 10 hours.
Yeah.
By the time I finished it.
Mine'll probably just be
like an epic.
Well, you wait for the twist.
Yeah.
There is a twist.
Is there?
Yeah.
Oh. I've heard there is.
Well, because it's got
spoiled me for the twist.
Oh, there's a
there
twist.
There is a twist.
Yeah.
But this video game plot has a twist.
Yeah. But it's a very linear story-based thing. Like, you know, it's chapters and you just kind of progress forward and then have characters that follow you around using, you know, like the Half-Life friend, yeah. You know, characters that'll walk around and say things to you and stuff. And then there's story segments in the middle and it's just really, really unique. You know, like it's this fantasy world that isn't high fantasy or like familiar in any way, you know?
Yeah.
Like, how would you describe
surrealist
it?
Surrealist element. Like, I would almost say like French surrealist fantasy stuff. Like, it's, there were a bunch of adventure games that made in Europe, like in the late
90s. Closer to this
that
style.
Were kind of closer to that like style. What? But there weren't ones that I personally played, but I remember being like writing for Adventure Gamers, seeing just like crazy looking screenshots of stuff like that. But it's, an actual, you know, it's a full-on, like, completely realized real-time 3D game. And it's actually, I was talking about this with Steve. Steve and I talk about this a lot, actually, just generally speaking. This being, at least to us, a really attractive scope of game that's really creative. It's a full, you know, full 3D game. You're in the game. It's got all of the kind of trappings of what you think about when you think of kind of a full-scale video game.
Yeah, well, I mean, it has kind of the touchstones of being like an immersive game.
Right,
you know,
exactly,
like you inhabit a fully environment that
a
surrounds
fully realized
you, you
world.
Know?
Yeah, exactly. And but it's not you wouldn't classify it as AAA in terms of budget or production values or anything. It's not doesn't cost hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars. It doesn't need.
It probably costs hundreds of thousands of dollars.
But. Really? You think so?
Yes. I mean, you got
only like three people.
Well, the like creative team are three brothers that founded it. But in the credits, there's probably like 12 people, that were involved. So, you know, just
so, yeah, probably,
as far as paying those dudes and
yeah.
equipment. Yeah. But, you know, anyway.
But it doesn't need, you know, it's not going to need to sell a million fucking copies to break even.
I mean, it's not going to go to retail at all, you know, like
I think it is in some markets.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was looking that up today actually.
Oh, I didn't know they were even going to box it.
Yeah, because they have a publisher.
Oh, that's cool.
In some regions.
In Russia and stuff? Or
I don't know. The name of the publisher was...
Well, because I saw something on their website that was like they were going to be published by 1C or something like that, but I assumed it was for digital distribution. I didn't see that.
They have another publisher also then that's...
Sorry, I could be wrong, but I thought that I saw they had like an Eastern European or a Russian publisher.
Yeah, but in any case, they're definitely pushing download as the main venue.
Yeah, that's cool.
And I really like it. I think I've seen some people criticize it for being a little repetitive in terms of gameplay, and I can see where they're coming from, but to me the mechanic holds up pretty well.
Yeah.
And I mean it's not much more repetitive than
a first person shooter.
Where you're basically just firing bullets at guys the whole time. But they do a really good job, I think, of continually messing with the environments and putting you in areas with different color tone and different architecture
and also just different dynamics in each level. Like they follow a very similar, you know, strategy to a first person shooter campaign where the core thing you do doesn't change, so they keep it interesting by having, you know, the spaces shaped in different ways, or having like, you know, sort of special case setups where in this part there's a guy that perches up on top of this thing and throws these weird, you know, like objects at you and you have to deal with them, and it's sort of special like gameplay that surrounds the core mechanics and really keeps it interesting. You know, I think they did a great job of that. They kept surprising me with, oh, how is this space going to be set up and how are the enemies going to act that's different from the last time,
right?
And yeah, they went really far with that in some cases. Like they're introducing that whole like torch mechanic. Like there's a part where you have to like keep a torch lit to have light around yourself, and then but it's not as simple as that. They add on different kinds of enemies that react to the light and the fire in different ways and stuff like that. Yeah. It's cool.
Sweet.
Yeah.
It's a good game. I would recommend it.
It also has
strongly.
A very brisk introduction and a really, I think, well-paced tutorial, like especially for gamers. The thing I'm sort of finding out that I like about indie games lately is that they don't, they don't have production value, so they don't have cutscenes and bullshit before the game actually starts. So but more than that, I think they did a good job with sort of, you know, getting a lot of the crap out of the way and just sort of getting you into the game.
Yeah.
Which was fun.
Yeah. There are a fair amount of in-engine cutscenes in Xenoblade.
There are, but
I was kind of disappointed that you can't skip them. Like,
same.
Especially
after I saw a bunch of your house and went back and had to watch the same ones at my house.
Yeah. Like, I would love to play the game through again, but sitting through some of that stuff, especially the tutorial stuff, will be kind of tedious. But you know, you can, I guess you can skip chapters if you're replaying as far as skipping tutorial stuff.
Maybe with a game that was clearly as sort of spendthrift as that, they felt even more like attached to the cutscenes that they'd be like, this was so much of our budget.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe
yeah.
not. Maybe
I don't know.
Just a bad call.
But yeah,
or a good call.
The coolest thing about it, I mean, not the coolest thing, because obviously the mechanics and how you play it is awesome, but the visual style of the world and the characters really
a pretty big selling
point. Amazing.
Yeah.
You know, like it's so unique from anything else. Like the architecture has real world touchstones. Like they have like a lot of architecture that's influenced by Gaudi, you know, the Spanish architect, and it's cool to see unique points of view in a game that I actually want to play, because you see so much of the same stuff so often, you know.
No, absolutely, I agree.
Yeah,
so I think Steve and I would recommend it. Nick,
Nick would recommend the tutorial, and I would recommend that I get it and play it.
Sweet. I would recommend it highly.
Cool.
It's pretty hard. That's the one thing.
There are some pretty hard parts.
And it defaults to hard mode as opposed to normal mode just when you start the game. So if it starts kicking your ass, go into the options and put it back to normal, and it'll still kick your ass sometimes.
Normal's the lowest though, so you know.
Yeah.
So it's fast food style with medium small, medium large, extra large.
Yep. Pretty much. Except they're not fucking around, because normal is not very easy.
Right. So one
medium
thing,
is not
the
medium.
Like gulping down a medium. Yeah. Anyway.
So one thing that Jake also wanted to talk about was Chinatown Wars.
That was in the PPS.
Wizard, but I think we covered that by saying he wanted to talk about the wizard. So Chinatown Wars.
Yeah.
By the sound effect that you're going to splice in while you're editing this.
Maybe. Anyway, Chinatown Wars. Jake, you had some opinions about this last week, or we didn't end up talking about them.
I had opinions. I haven't
played as much.
I still haven't. I haven't actually gotten a chance to play it since last week, but all I was saying about it was...
Have all you guys played it?
I have.
A little bit.
You've probably played more than me at this point. I only
probably
played the first few missions.
Yeah.
I haven't even touched it, so...
Chinatown Wars, I guess what it made me realize more than ever before, what I really like about modern GTA games is the city and exploring the city and just sort of the... the Visceral Games feeling that I get.
Oh, man. That signature EA Redwood Shores.
Yeah, it's in my blood. But just like, I really just enjoy driving the car around and sort of seeing the place and, you know, occasionally doing missions, but like the jumps and the unlock new areas for going, skulking around in alleys and stuff.
Yeah. And just being in the place.
Chinatown Wars, just sort of by its nature as a DS game, can't support that sort of level of fidelity. Like, it has a complete city and it's all 3D and it looks amazing. And it does sort of like harken back to the old GTA style games, but all that I've done so far, at least, even though I've tried to fight it, is just play the old classic Rockstar, chase a dude and kill him,
right?
The pizza delivery guy, or you know, find this person and drive them back to their house. And I mean, I don't know if the game gets more than that, but I think what I said last week was that it sort of does feel like it. It has the sort of stripped down gameplay.
It steals it down. It has
the stripped down gameplay of the old games, but the sort of taking yourself really damn seriously narrative of the new games. And those are the two things that I'm not. So I don't know what you've played it more than me. So I want
to hear. So even if you try not to do missions, you just can't find other things to do in the city.
I mean, there's other things to do, but there's just in terms of just, I didn't feel like just. Like, I'm sure that if I got in a vehicle, maybe it has the other sort of taxi style missions or whatever, but you can't just, I was unable to just derive fun from wandering around and seeing the sights because there's no sights to see because it's a top down DS thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I had sort of, for some reason, expected that wouldn't be as
cut
as it was.
The city overall is kind of a little bit bland. I don't know, from just driving around, I haven't played it a whole lot either, but it just seems like a lot of buildings aren't very distinctive. Just, when you're going from point A to point B, you don't see
the limitations of the DS showed themselves more in my play experience than I thought it would, even though it's super impressive and surprising that much of a GTA game is on there.
No, it's impressive.
Anyway.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Though. It's like the same layout as Liberty City in GTA 4, right?
Yeah, basically. Yeah. It's just scaled down.
Right.
Yeah.
But I just thought I read that.
Yeah, it's basically the same layout. I've been playing it for... Actually, I beat Henry Hatsworth finally, and
congratulations.
Believe it or not, I beat the fucking even harder mode because I had no other games with me on my flight to and from the UK. So
you knocked it up a notch.
Out of myself. Yeah.
Jesus.
So I'm fucking done with that game forever at this point. But after that, I moved on to GTA, Chinatown Wars, and I started out feeling the same way you did, Jake. And now,
am I going to be proven wrong?
Well,
am I going to be excited?
You won't be proven wrong on the vibrant nature of the city, which is... Definitely, you know, low poly DS stuff. I mean, it's definitely, you're only ever going to see it from the top down. You're not going to get that sense of walking around the city and being in the city. But one thing it does have is you're right that it sort of does have that more modern era GTA kind of somber story. But it's actually, it says it's written by Dan Houser or Sam, whichever one is the writer, and some other guy, but it feels like it's pretty much just written by another guy because it's actually a lot less of a kind of, there's a lot less gravitas going on. There's no, like, your character is always sort of being just kind of a goofy guy in his response. Right. And then other characters, unlike most video games, will actually respond to what you said instead of just ignoring your goofy, like, snark statement. You know, most video games, the main character is like a snark machine, and then, but other NPCs don't really like frequently actually respond to that.
Yeah,
they just say whatever they're already saying.
Right. Yeah, it's like in a sitcom or whatever when somebody says something that's patently hilarious and no one reacts.
Right. Mm-hmm. In this game, depending on the character, they actually will respond to what you say, and it makes the game feel a few levels lighter. Like,
that's cool,
as opposed to just having it be GTA 4 with a wisecracking guy. Like, it's just more of a lighter tone in general. But anyway, the main thing I actually haven't been even doing that many missions. I did a bunch of missions, and now I've basically just been doing the taxi shit because it actually really does feel a lot to me like GTA 2 or 1 for that matter, but 2 because 2 is 3D, where you're just kind of driving around this city. The handling is really easy. You're just barreling over shit and kind of running around. And the drug minigame is surprisingly fun for me. Because it
persists, that's the thing that I've heard the most frequently.
And it
is
adds,
it like the dope wars part
exactly,
of it is really good.
And it adds a lot because those guys are everywhere. So, I mean, if you're just driving around and doing taxi shit or whatever, I mean, you will just run into those icons on your map, and you can just you can do more.
You will just see a junkie wandering around on the street.
Yeah, it's a GTA game. So, and there's so much. One thing that's a
can
little
you sell drugs to a hooker, then kill her and take the drugs back?
You know, in this then game, it's GTA. Can't. It's funny. In this game, you can't. Drugs only exist to be traded among dealers. It's entirely like a dealer economy. There's no
because you're a supplier, not a dealer yourself.
Right. Huh. You never come in contact with actual
you're a professional.
Users. Yeah.
Huh.
The only irritating thing for me so far, really, is that there are so many goddamn police in this game. Like, this city is fucking full of police everywhere.
So it's the opposite of GTA 4?
Yeah, sort of. But they compensate for it by actually having the escaping the police be a really seamlessly integrated minigame.
That's actually really that was something that I did really enjoy. Yeah. Where you can make them run into a wall, like in the tradition of classic car chases, or just crash them off the road.
It feels like taking them down in Burnout. Like it feels like a simplified version.
Yeah, or like of the Burnout it gets sort of mechanic. Like Spy Hunter style or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
right.
That is really good.
And you can actually
so you have your star level, and then beneath that is icons of how many cop cars are chasing you, and then they get a big red X through them and sort of goes. Careening off the road.
That's awesome.
And if you eliminate all the cars, you will lose your star rating. Yeah. As opposed
or
to
it's,
having
it,
to
that's
just...
What, that's what caused it to start blinking down.
Right. Well, yeah. Well, yeah. And as opposed to having to, like, literally just evade them for some amount of time.
Right.
And
it, or to it get makes out it of a radius more, like in GTA 4. Yeah.
And it makes it a much more active experience, and it also allows you to... Like, it's good that they did that, because every time you get busted, you lose all your drugs that you have on you, and that's pretty devastating at times if you're really into it. Yeah, I know. And so the fact that there actually is a fairly concrete mechanic to get out of getting away from cops, and unlike, you know, in GTA 4, there was a pretty concrete mechanic, but it always felt like I was cheating the game.
Yeah.
Like, I would just drive to some weird place and sit there.
Yeah, it was always really disappointing in GTA 4. I'm just like, exactly. You see the circle sort of recede. It's like, that's...
Yeah, these
That's
cops
it?
Are idiots or something. Whereas the one in Chinatown Wars is so preposterous. It's literally just like, total all the fucking cop cars.
Right.
Like, but it feels like you're actually doing it. You know what I mean? It feels like you're actually achieving that goal.
Yeah, that's really cool.
And it works really well. And you want to do it because you want to keep your fucking drugs. So, you know.
All right, well, I guess I need to enter the drug dealing and supplying aspect of this game, and then it will...
And I guess my final thought on this game, this might be a bullshit observation.
Probably.
To some people, but... I kind of wish it actually wasn't on the DS. Like,
ugh, bullshit.
Like, I kind of wish they had just made this exact game and just put it on, like, Steam and Live Arcade and PSN and stuff.
It was just a sort of like, slightly more arcadey and slightly more flip GTA game.
Yeah. Like, if they had just made a throwback GTA game. Yeah. And
well,
honestly,
I mean, that's the one reason that I haven't bought it, is just because, for a number of reasons, I don't really... like playing games on the DS, like because I never
for some reason like
well just because I don't have a commute, so I don't have any practical reason to play it on the DS.
I'm not one of those people who can stand like in line for something like on the
the DS though for some reason is the home of this style of game though, of like we're bringing back like this is a popular franchise, so we'll boil it down to its core mechanics.
Yeah.
And then put it out on the DS. At least that, Nintendo did that a lot.
Yeah, they have done it a lot.
Yeah.
A lot of companies have. I mean, Space Invaders Extreme.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Space Invaders Extreme is coming to Xbox, which
that's
is
true.
Cool.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
But yeah, like...
Even with Mario, I mean...
Yeah, New Super Mario Brothers, Phantom Hourglass, Mario Kart, were all just like best of core mechanics boiled down into one game.
Yeah. And I don't have any reason to play this stuff on a tiny, tiny screen. You know, like I'm sitting at home next to my big screen TV and looking at a 2x3-inch screen and playing it, and it's like uncomfortable to hold it for me. Like it's really not ergonomic.
I generally end up replacing a book with a DS when I'm going to sleep, so it works for me.
Yeah,
well,
I used to do that.
That ends up being such a small amount of time for me, though. Like
your choice.
No, I know it's my choice. I'm just saying, practically speaking, I'm the same as Steve. Practically speaking, 95% of the time that I play my DS, it's within walking distance, like within fucking eye shot of my TV or my big PC monitor.
Yeah.
Like I think it'd be awesome if a publisher actually had the balls to make a cool throwback game like this and just release it for digital download. I mean, I know they're not going to do it on a disc. That's just not going to happen these days, but just at least release it on the bigger platforms. Like I think that would be really fun. And honestly, based on the sales of Chinatown Wars on the DS, like,
probably
maybe that wouldn't have been a bad
idea.
I mean, the thing is that, like, maybe they would make it like a WiiWare or Xbox Live thing down the road, because they took the PSP games and put them on PS2.
Yeah, that's true.
So, but I'm not saying they would have to change a bunch of the, like, touchscreen dynamics and stuff, but, you know.
I do actually really like the touchscreen stuff. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, that is enjoyable. Yeah. The first time I moved garbage bags out of the way to get a gun out of a dumpster, I was pretty happy. just I think a company like Rockstar, it would probably actually be completely physically impossible for them to resist the temptation to not mocap, you know, voice, you know, direct the shit out of everything. Whereas on the DS, they can make this game probably for next to nothing compared to, you know, and even if someone said, we're putting out a GTA game on XBLA, it would be like, the style guide would come flying out and was like, okay.
Right.
Fuck, you can't just have a drawing of a guy with some text at the bottom of the screen.
Yeah, that's true.
You have to quadruple your budget, and then it's not really, the point is gone, unfortunately. Yeah.
They did, I mean, I know it's totally different, but they did release the GTA 1 and 2 a couple years ago. Yeah, I mean, I know it's different, but it's...
This game isn't like Mega Man 9.
I know.
Well, I mean, then, you know, maybe this would be the ideal way to do it then, would be to be constrained by the platform, and then... take that and port it,
do the special edition.
Well, I mean, just port it to download, to console platforms, because then they probably wouldn't go back and do a bunch of, you know, mocap 3D stuff. They'd probably just do the bare bones updates to fit the platform and release it, and you'd get to play that thing at home, which would be cool.
I think it's and this is going to be a stupid even thing to keep talking about, but I think that it's such a big step up from the, like, 200 by 250 square of the DS, and it's like 4x4 pixel textures. To anything, even the Wii, even the iPhone, it would look so shitty.
Yeah,
and I'm not saying that I wouldn't play it because it's an enjoyable game, but I just think people would look at it and go, "What?"
Yeah, I guess, like, I think people I haven't
looked
seen
at this
it.
Game and went, "What?"
Yeah,
I guess I would looked at it and said, "This is on the DS, Jesus!" And it was amazing to me.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I guess I maybe so. Maybe people will say, "What?" Anyway,
well, I mean, I'm referring just to the sales, basically.
Yeah. If a development studio had that long term plan in the first place, it would probably retain higher res copies of all their assets and shit. But whatever.
Whatever. Chinatown Wars.
Chinatown Wars on the Nintendo DS, recommended by IdleThumbs.net.
Oh.
Mail.
So yeah, moving on to more mail here.
Let's see.
All right, so Scott here writes...
Which one of us is he?
So Scott writes in to basically agree with how we mentioned last week, how many games sort of just ape scenes and sequences and tone from film, etc.
This is a great email.
He compared that to, he contrasted that with games that create their own holy shit moments. He says a perfect example is Battlefield 1942. How many times were you playing that and just had a moment where you just all laughed out loud and awe and excitement, etc. Anyway, he goes on to his question. That's more of a response to something we said. Maybe something that I said. Maybe. I forget. He says...
You said it.
It was about how...
Nick said it.
Some of these games, like, for example, GTA, like we were just talking about. And... we had another example of a game, and I don't even remember what it is. Oh, Mafia. Coming from non-American developers, but being some of the most prominent examples of games that are set in, like, very quintessentially American locations.
Games about America.
Exactly. And his response to that is that American developers don't create American experiences because it isn't in their best intentions to do so. They know intrinsically what the experience of living in America is like because they, in fact, live there. He compares it to visiting another country for a couple of weeks or something and having a much more intense, vibrant sort of experience of what that country is, and then being more compelled, I guess, to create works based on it.
Yeah.
He says the fact that the Rockstar guys are not from America allows them to make this bizarre yet awesome conglomeration of American pop culture and stuff into video game form. I think it's a valid... point. Although I would also, I guess my
that's
counter
like,
would be that
there's plenty of
Francis
there's,
Ford Coppola,
there's,
like Martin Scorsese,
whatever,
like film noir, all that
stuff
was born
of
in America.
There's plenty of American artists in all mediums who comment on America.
I was just saying.
Well, you just cited two filmmakers in a film genre.
Yeah, because we're talking about, those are things that are basically about crime, about like the same type of...
I got it.
What was it?
I just didn't want to restrict it to, well, films do it, so obviously games
I know,
should
I
be able
maybe
to.
Maybe I would just throw out some examples to.
Yeah. What point were you going to make, Jake?
Nothing. I was just going to say more. I just
bit of a Xeno clash going on here.
This is a little Xeno clash. Nothing. Never mind. Just
what
people who make creative
no,
work
it's
in
a,
all things, not just film.
Yeah.
From America, comment on America very successfully, and they don't. need to be from Europe taking a vacation to America.
Yeah, that's a totally good point.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's the same thing as Chris was saying.
It's the reason that you only really see Chileans making really good media about Xenozoid. Because you know? Xenozoidians, they're just surrounded by that. They don't think it's weird. We all do.
But no, I mean, that is a, what he said is also a totally fair point. And by he, I mean Chris. Francis Ford Coppola makes great films.
Thanks, Jake.
I've had that same thought specifically about like the GTA series in the past, that you know it's a really successful satire because it's people looking at America from the outside and doing their condensed kind of vision, you know, all the weird shit they notice about it is
right. It's all it comes it's from all an totally outside perspective.
But then the other side of that is
Nerd Jake.
Did you want to say something?
No, I didn't. I just wanted to keep sort of
bobbing
being a
your
part
head.
Of your sentence.
I guess the other side of that is that pretty much all of the games about Japan come from Japan. And there's a shitload of games that are very much about or you know kind of yeah completely made out of Japanese culture. You know, and they don't like. Yeah, I wonder if it's really more of a Europe to America thing than just the rest of the world to America thing, because you don't see, for instance, any Japanese games that are about, you know, America or Americanism or any stuff like that, and vice versa, you know.
Does No More Heroes count? I guess it's about Japan to a lot, but it's both.
Yeah, I guess I think No More Heroes is kind of more about, like, anime culture in general, you know.
I guess.
But yeah.
Yeah.
I would say, I guess, with respect to GTA, about that series, I love the GTA series a lot. I haven't completed all the games, but I've played all of them and I've enjoyed them. And but I would say that I think they might get slightly too much credit for being like really sharp, incisive observers of American culture. Like, I feel like most of it is just kind of like
it's pretty ham-fisted.
Guns are sold in stores and a crazy conservative is on the radio. And it's like,
gets toned down like as the series is going.
Yeah, I know.
On,
but I just mean,
not the radio stuff.
Not
the
most part.
Okay, the radio stuff hasn't.
But yeah, Ammunition went away.
Ammunition, exactly. That stuff got toned down. But I think generally they might, the praise for that stuff might be a bit hyperbolic. Yeah. Like, I think it works well for the over the top nature of the games, but I also don't think GTA is saying anything groundbreaking about America. Yeah. I never really did either.
No, but I think that there's a distinction to be made between kind of the quality or incisiveness of the actual satire and just the fact that that was the premise that they chose. Right. Yeah.
No, I agree. And,
I think that's what's the noble part about it is like an American team probably would not have taken that tack in the first place.
I agree.
You know?
Yeah.
I think that's really intriguing. Yeah. You know,
I agree. That was exactly why I brought it up last week. Because it does seem strange to me.
Yeah. And it makes me enjoy those games a lot. You know?
Same.
I think it's in large part because of how much it is a dialogue between, you know, the actual genre, like the things that you're doing, and how they were like, okay, we're making a game about running around a city being crazy, doing a lot of urban violence and everything, and then having the fiction also be kind of like an overblown vision of modern America, you know.
Yeah,
right.
You know, it's great because it all makes a nice loop. It's cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I guess there's Max Payne also.
Yeah.
And the IO games, some of them anyway.
Yeah, well, like Blood Money,
yeah,
and I guess Canon Lynch.
Yeah,
Canon Lynch was really played it really straight. It was basically just a Michael Mann movie, you know. Yeah, but but especially Hitman Blood Money, since it's the first one that they set in America, it has that weird like distorted lens. Sort
of, it does, yeah.
Kind of, you know, like the Southern missions.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that was pretty great.
And the suburban one was really cool in that respect, I thought. Yeah, weird.
Outside perspectives.
So, what is game?
World gaming. That, like, well, I mean, I say the phrase world gaming jokefully, but on the other hand, I guess last week I was just thinking about the games that I was playing, and it made me really happy that, you know, in like one day I had been playing a game from Belgium and a game, you know, like,
which game was that?
The Path.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I was playing The Path, and you know, like, I don't know, I forget what else, but I was just thinking to myself, it's awesome that in my just sort of standard gaming diet, I happened to play games from all over the world. Like, it was from three different countries that were on three different continents, right, or whatever. And it wasn't like world cinema where you kind of have to seek that out or be like a foreign film fan. It's just like, hey, games that are all part of the same dialogue come from all different points in the world.
I think it might be the only major entertainment medium that's like that.
And the only reason that is because no one knows where games are actually.
And also, for some reason, because I think there's a lot less. We could probably hash out why this is if we wanted to, but I mean, there's less sort of specific cultural, history that goes with games. For example, if you go to Europe, like a lot of the local pop music in Italy or France or something has a very distinctive sound to it that you wouldn't necessarily expect from
but they're all playing Halo.
The video games are all kind of the same type of thing. Like, you're, for the most part, like they might choose a different setting or theme or something, but like the basic way you play the Hitman is essentially the same way you enjoy else. Yeah, exactly. And so it's,
I don't know. I like
some of that, like Japanese RPGs and Korean, MMOs and things are really distinctive.
I definitely feel
Korean,
like
MMOs are maybe an extreme case.
Yeah, but I feel like I personally feel like there's kind of a Northern European style. Mm-hmm. Like, you, like there's a lot of overlap to some qualities of like Starbreeze's games and Remedy's games and IO's games, where they're kind of interested in, I mean, for one thing, none of them are very fantastical. Yeah, they're all about people, for the most part. Yeah. The Darkness had like demonic elements to it or whatever, but they went for like photorealism and immersion. They all have this, I don't know, semi, a little bit kind of like clinical quality to them or something.
Yeah, I totally agree.
But tonally, there are definitely some kind of regional similarities that I feel between certain kinds of games.
I totally agree with that. But you have less of the sort of like, accordions have been a big part of our music for 300 years, and so you'll hear them in a pop song.
Hear so Indian pop music, between from song to song and everything. Yeah,
just hopefully 100 years from now, people will be like, "Oh man, classic!" Started with The Witcher, and then just kept going. That'd be weird.
Yeah, but I remember what the three games were. They were The Path, American McGee's Alice, and Outrun SP Arcade.
Wow. Well, Alice, how'd you end up playing that?
Someone at work had brought in a bunch of games that I don't know, for whatever reason they were like cleaning out their closet, and they had this huge pile of games, and Alice was one of them, and I was like, I should try American McGee's Alice. I played a couple hours of it. It was a game. Video game by American McGee.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good time.
All right. Are you ready for another question from another reader?
A piece of mail?
We have a lot of mail that's just sort of long rambling stuff saying you guys are cool, basically. I'm trying to find
Just so many emails saying we're cool.
There's one that's a picture of a signpost to a place called Bargo.
That's good.
So maybe we should put that on our website.
Maybe you should also put on our website the sign to a place called The Wizard. That you photographed while we were out the other day.
Right. Did we talk about this yet?
No, we didn't.
Oh, I thought you were pausing for him to insert the wizard. The Wizard.
No, I was waiting for Chris to fucking recognize
what you were talking about. Yeah, I was in London, obviously, a couple weeks ago, and I was meeting Ben, who is one of the other longtime Idle Thumbs guys, and he works at Sony in London, and Steve looks confused. He no longer knows the story he wants to bring up.
No, this isn't the story that I was thinking of, but go ahead.
Oh, okay.
Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, it's not. Oh, well, whatever.
Continue.
Sorry, I think it's funny.
lots of signs lately.
Yeah. So we were in front of, we were meeting Ben in front of the Sony building, and out in front of the building, there's a huge Killzone 2 ad, and there's just massive, 6 foot tall text that says Killzone 2, you will be blown away. with a big Killzone face.
Oh, that's outstanding.
Yeah.
That's
amazing. And so I took a picture along with WrestleMania, who's one of our listeners, and who I was hanging out with that day, met up with him, and there's us in front of it giving a thumbs up. So that was a pretty great scenario that played out.
The actual thing I was thinking of was just, we were out the other weekend and we walked past this place called The Wizard Smoke Shop.
Right.
And it was shut down. I guess it had gone out of business, but it was amazing. Yeah. And a picture was taken.
Cool. Yeah. Maybe we should actually take a break.
Yeah, let's do that.
Wizard.
Thanks, Steve.
Wizard. The Wizard. The Wizard.
Yeah, I retweeted that.
Okay.
I didn't find it myself, but yeah, it's really cool. And it is. Okay, so Nick Brecken writes in to say, did you guys see this Nightmare Mario 64 thing? Yeah, I saw this on Offworld, which is a really cool video game blog for anyone who doesn't read it. It's like kind of interesting game culture stuff. I guess it's a subset of Boing Boing.
Yeah.
But they linked this YouTube video that was by this guy who, I guess, all of his videos that he submits are like weird glitches and corrupted games and stuff like that from all sorts of different video games. And he posted this thing that he didn't specifically say what the method for getting it was, but it was Mario 64 that was all black and white and posterized, like yeah, really high contrast, but with gray tones and stuff, black and white. And
it was like the Eraserhead black and white. Mario,
yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah, yeah. I mean
Mario. Sorry,
it's the Eraserhead Peter Molyneux's black and white.
I mean Mario.
Sorry. Keep thinking of all those.
Right.
I mean Mario. I don't know.
So yeah, it comes up on the start screen and it's all black and white, and the music is different. Like, I guess it's a corruption of the actual music where it turns into these really weird, yeah, ominous drone, yes, sounds.
Right. And then Mario's eyes start to bleed.
Well, like, Mario's head spins around, and yeah, there's these tones in the background like, and then he goes, it's me, Mario. And you're like, and then his eyes like sparkle,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah,
but it's black and white, and it's the fucking freakiest shit.
And then
he starts running around and is running around the world. And like, yeah, it's kind of running at a weird frame rate. Well, because it's probably on an emulator, so it's kind of like a little bit jumpy every once in a while. And so he's like running around and then he hitches, and then it's like,
I watched it at work and I didn't have headphones, so I didn't hear the sounds. So,
it's fucking
part.
Key.
Yeah, oh man.
Yeah.
All right. I'll listen to it after we're done today.
It's an amazing juxtaposition.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That carnival level would be amazing.
The Nightmare, yeah, Mario 64.
And yeah, yeah. And so the weird thing was that I was looking at it, it looked like there was like, I was looking at it closely, it looked like there was kind of like a film grain effect,
yeah,
on there or,
yeah,
something.
Yeah.
And so I thought maybe that actually the black and white part of it was like faked.
Somebody's TV or something?
Well, no,
the
like,
guy,
like,
the guy
they,
said
like,
he did modify the video.
Oh, did he?
He said
if you actually go back to the original YouTube.
Yeah. I saw that comment. He said, yeah, he had used Windows Media, Movie Maker.
Right.
But okay. So maybe it was just a sound corruption, and then he was like, it would make it creepier if I made it black and white. Or, yeah, something, but he didn't, yeah, specifically say.
I don't know, but you should look
it's
that up.
Great,
it doesn't matter, yeah, how it pretty, happened.
Yeah, it's a great,
it's
video.
A video.
The resultant,
awesome,
thing is good.
Yeah.
Anyway, next mail after that fascinating reader mail from someone.
It was Nick Breeden.
Oh right, Nick Breeden.
World traveler.
I thought, yes, he just lived in Bulgaria. You're the world traveler.
Wait, oh, yeah. Bulgaria?
I mean, sorry.
Bangladesh?
Bangladesh.
Where in the world is
Big Spoiler!
Where in the world are Big Bird bones?
A warrant.
What? Craig Stewart. I'm going to condense this. Oh, yeah. I'm going to condense this email down to a very, very short summary here. Basically, Craig Stewart wants to know what we think of collector's editions. So, it was about 8 times longer than that, but it's basically what he's asking. What do you guys think?
Well, does he have any thoughts on it? Is he pro or con collector's edition, or did he say?
It seems
like it might be the other relevant.
He sort of just like tosses in some kind of back and forth about it. He says, you know, every time I go to reserve a game, it's like $10
right,
more for this shiny thing with the bonus DVD that I'll only watch once.
All
I mean,
right,
it seems like he's not thrilled about them, but,
okay,
but he's not necessarily like, it seems like he hates them.
God, have I ever even bought a collector's edition?
I have, because I am stupid. Sometimes,
well,
I get a lot.
Like, I really like.
I don't think there's any reason not to if you want the actual extra stuff it comes with.
Well, yeah, sometimes I don't. Well, not that I don't want them, but sometimes I think I will because I, yeah, pretty much every time I've bought, I would say a great majority of the time I've bought, you know, a Criterion DVD or some special edition DVD. There's always shit on there that I end up really enjoying.
I would,
yeah,
buy like
and
Valve's special edition if the developer commentary and all that shit happened to be like part of the special edition.
Yeah, but they give that stuff away for free.
I know, exactly. But that's what I'm saying. Like, but yeah, that's the kind of thing that I wish was in special editions, whereas most of it is...
Yeah,
like,
I wish they
know,
didn't give us that shit for free.
I don't think most companies would, is what I'm saying. I guess.
I know this one company that gives away free special edition content with every season of episodic games that they sell on their website.
Wait, what company?
Who is that? I don't know who that is.
Oh, I think it's the guys who made Xenoclash. It's some sort of independent studio that lands between...
Confirmed.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, it occupies that middle ground between indie retro and big budget
and
AAA.
Sort of AAA, yeah. I think it's...
It's telltalegames.internet.com!
No, but
they make Sam and Max and all sorts of shit.
It's .museum.
Oh.
I like special editions, except that I think, like everyone else here, I like the idea of them more than the actual thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I swear to God, I have bought special editions. I know for sure. I don't know why. Well, I mean, I do know why. I bought the special edition of of Fear when it came out because I had recently played No One Lives Forever 2 and I was super psyched. And I interviewed Craig Hubbard and stuff, and it had the special stuff on the special edition for that was a DVD that had a bunch of behind the scenes interviews and making of and stuff like that.
Oh man, you know one hardcore special edition?
Mm-mm.
I don't have this, but it seems like a pretty ridiculous thing. The collector's edition of Unreal Tournament 3 includes like 30 hours or something ridiculous.
Oh yeah,
of tutorials.
Yeah,
and stuff?
Of that's Unreal awesome. Editor.
No, that's awesome.
Yeah. Like well-produced video tutorials. Yeah. I've heard.
Well, that's just like Unreal
scene
Pro Edition, basically.
Like, yeah, it's probably like their internal training videos if they bothered to make them at all. I wouldn't be. I mean, because they're just teaching how to use the tools. Right?
It's an external company that produced them.
Oh really?
Yeah.
So it's not like Epic staff that's actually
originally
doing...
made for like licensees or something potentially.
I don't really know honestly what it was originally.
But
for.
Anyway,
let's all speculate as to what those videos were for.
If you know who made the videos for the Unreal Tournament 3 Special Edition, write to questions@idlethumbs.net.
3D Realms.
3D. I think it's 3D Buzz. I don't really know what that company does.
Actually, speaking of 3D Realms, especially.
The
that
videos.
I would buy is Duke Nukem Forever with previous builds.
Oh, yeah. We've talked about that before.
God,
that'd be great.
That's a pretty good idea.
That'd be awesome.
But yeah, special edition stuff, it's always like, oh, it's like the when you, if you could buy like the gold Half-Life 2 or whatever, where it's like, it includes a box and a shirt.
Right.
It's like it includes a shirt that is probably large men's and a box that is an empty box.
Well, what's getting really out of hand now are
that's not
like,
very typical, though.
GameStop exclusives. If you go to GameStop.com and look at their front page now, it is just every single game has a GameStop exclusive.
You get an extra mission or like a medallion
every fucking
or something.
Game.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Yep.
Yeah. I bought the.
And it's all crap.
I remember the recent thing. I did buy the Fallout 3 Special Edition, not the Super Special Edition that had a fake Pip-Boy in it, but the normal Special Edition that had a lunchbox and an art book. And I think that's. Oh, and the bobblehead thing.
Yeah.
It's cool. I like that. I'm glad I have that stuff because that's a cool game.
Yeah, so apparently our feeling on special editions are if they're lame,
you don't buy them. Really
if they have worthwhile content, I mean, I don't know. One of us could have unnecessarily been ideologically opposed to them just so because we're like stomping around on the web.
Yeah. The thing about GameStop exclusive stuff or whatever, like especially the you get an extra vehicle or mission or whatever. Whenever I see that on the website, I go, okay, I'll buy that from wherever I want, and then I'll Google search. Unlock extra content.
Yeah, I know.
After I buy it, and I
that's what
put the code in. Like,
yeah, well,
So I mean, I guess what I would say is I like when I mean I feel almost the same about like special editions that have like behind the scenes or video content or whatever. Where I don't know if they probably get shut down by legal whenever they try to do that, but I would be fine if I could just see that stuff on the internet and not have to pay for it with a special edition. Like I like that. Well, I like when special editions have actual physical. Pack in stuff.
Oh,
I think that makes a special edition worth
materials.
It if it's something cool.
Yeah.
I remember what this is sort of related to what you mentioned about legal shutting things down. I was actually impressed when I mean not that the sales of this game were in jeopardy or anything, but Halo 2, the special edition like behind the scenes feature, I was really impressed that they didn't edit out like basically a montage of developers at the end being like, so any regrets about Halo 2? And it was just like a fucking assault of developers from Bungie being like, oh my god, I wish we had more time. Like, if they would have just given us a couple more weeks, I swear to god, like, we could have just locked some of this stuff down. They were just like, oh, two more weeks, I swear we could have just done it with that. Like, it
That's
was
awesome.
Like very specific.
Yeah.
Like, this is how close we were. And I was really amazed that Bungie actually got that in without Microsoft being like, don't really think that's what we're going to say.
Well, they already
and
bought
that...
the collector's edition if they're seeing that video.
Exactly. I know. I mean, and again, it's not like that game wasn't going to sell well, but I thought that was a cool thing. I mean, it sucks that that was the case, but I mean, it was cool that they had that in there to see.
The thing, and I'm thinking of this because I'm looking at your copy of Metal Gear Solid 3 Subsistence right now.
That was a great thing.
Yeah. And I'm more conflicted about that where like they sell the game for $60 at release, and then 6 months later, they're like, now we're going to sell the special version. And it's cool if you're not someone who bought the original game on, like, on release day. Yeah, and same... Well, no. I did buy Metal Gear Solid 3 before Subsistence came out. But, like, they're I guess it's mostly Japanese games, almost exclusively, that do that. But that one always seems like kind of a slap in the face compared to just, well, here's a collector's edition you can buy if you want or not, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
That was an interesting case, though, because so much of it was redeveloped. I mean, like, at least some of the... I mean, just the camera system and stuff like that was actually a different experience, which is unusual.
And much better, in my opinion.
Yeah, yeah. I'm glad I waited on that one. Let's see. What do we have here? Thomas Barkhus writes... Oh, actually, this might not make it in. He writes...
Does he not say we're awesome?
He writes, fuck shit, piss cunt.
You're pretty close. He writes, you guys have the best fucking gaming podcast, maybe the best podcast ever. You guys are awesome. My friend got a BJ while listening to you guys in the car. Now his girlfriend plays Killzone. Oh, now his girlfriend's plays Killzone and kicks his ass. Then when they're done, he fucks her. Fucking sweet. Keep it going, wizard. So that's the email. The
Who's
subject
that
was wizard.
From the wizard? Oh.
All right.
It's from Thomas Barkhus.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Oh.
So, of course.
Yeah. Okay. So, we'll just make that entire text string the title of this episode.
I dislike the fact that someone got a BJ while listening to this podcast.
Yeah. I thought it was from the wizard. At that point, I would have been.
The wizard's friend got a BJ while listening to this podcast?
There's our episode title.
Yeah, there's a lot of different problems with that.
Yeah, that might have to go.
No, I meant with the concept, not with the actual...
Yeah, the content's fine.
Okay.
Yeah, you could run that for all, like, oh no, adult content warning now. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's a terrible mail, but, you know, I was specifically saying there's a lot of different things wrong with the idea of someone listening to you guys talk while getting a BJ in his car. So many different problems.
I hope that he had the podcast on tape cassette.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway,
maybe in a convertible.
We're getting a little, maybe in a convertible.
I don't know.
Dear the wizard, please write back and tell us the make and model of your friend's car.
Sound system details, please. Bo Hagen Nielsen writes, "Hi lads at Idle Thumbs.
Hello.
What is game? Regards, Arg." All right. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Some sort of arg.
It's an arg?
Yeah. What is game? Arg.
Fun is game.
Sweet. All right. We're getting that nailed down. Sean Lane writes, "What is game? How is game formed? How game get pregnant?"
Oh, man. All right. That's a good question.
Game gets pregnant when you duct tape two game cubes together. Makes a Wii. Right, Chris Eckert?
Oh, man. Call back to GDC 2006?
Seven, maybe.
He's going to answer for every one of these questions. Keep throwing them out. Let's hear it.
Let's move on, maybe. David Taylor writes, "I'll try to keep this quick so this letter might get read. Good job. Question, have any of you guys played Stalker, Shadow of Chernobyl? If so, what did you think? Given your collective affection for Far Cry 2, you might like it." And then
this noob's talking to us like we haven't played Stalker yet. Yeah, fucking right.
Yeah. Well,
come on, I played it.
I know, I did too. I mean,
I played it years before Far Cry 2 was released.
Same here.
I finished it.
You might like it, though.
I might have liked it, and in fact, did.
Did you play it, Nick?
Yeah.
What'd you think?
I liked a lot of it. I didn't like some of it.
Nice, good.
Good review.
Yeah.
Sounds like about a 7.5.
Solid, not spectacular.
It's like a Dutch thumb.
Yeah, it's like a Bill Clinton thumb.
Man, I used to really enjoy that thumb.
Stalker was a game that you had to fight against in some cases, like to play it.
I agree. Yeah,
you know, it tried to,
even without the bugs.
Yeah,
I had
one of the most horrible bugs. That, like, the worst bugs are the ones that cause major, like, progression loss. Like, okay, that bug happened, now play the last 3 hours over.
Yeah.
And that happened to me because I was quick saving in the same slot, and then there's also autosave, you know, and there was this part where I'm going through this whole fucking...
Oh god, I see where this is going.
So I'm going through this gigantic fucking whatever, I guess it was one of the cooling towers or something, and you go through all this shit and you fight a bunch of guys and you get to the end, and there was one of those mutants that like makes you think that you're like being pulled forward and backwards or whatever. And he killed me once, and so I knew he was there, and loaded my quick save from a few moments earlier. And the actual mission was to like get an object that some guy had dropped or whatever. I was like, all right, that fucking mutant's gonna be in there. I'll just throw a grenade around the corner. So I threw it and blew him up. And then the quest arrow thing was pointing me to the spot where he had been standing, and it was like, pick up that object. I was like, what fucking? Then I looked everywhere because I was like, my grenade must have made it fly into a corner or something like that. Yeah. And I couldn't find it. And I was like, all right, well,
but it was scripted to actually just coordinates in the world.
And so I was like, I don't know. And I quick saved after I killed the guy because I had killed him. And then I was like, well, maybe I'm supposed to go further. And so I went up and outside, and it auto saved when I went outside. And then I finally realized after that point, my grenade blew the object through the world geometry and out into space. Yeah. And my like last manual save before that was like 3 hours prior.
Oh man.
And I liked the game enough that I actually fucking did it over. It didn't make me stop, but that game really
tried to make
me stop many times.
Stop on a bug myself.
Yeah.
Stop on a bug.
But I was reading a Rock Paper Shotgun article just recently that was about like how Alec Mir or one of their guys had started up and played Stalker again and had tried out a shit ton of mods for it, and his post was kind of like, here are what I found to be the best mods to just play Stalker again like it's a new experience but not have it really fuck anything up.
That's cool.
And it made me kind of want to pull out Stalker again and put those sweet mods on it and see if it was more enjoyable than the last time I played it, which was actually pretty enjoyable.
Play Clear Sky?
No.
I didn't either.
Coming out.
Yeah. All I wanted.
Trip yet.
Whoa. Huh. All I wanted out of Clear Sky was just more Stalker, but nothing about it is fucked up, you know? And then I read reviews that was like, it's more Stalker, but they tried to change a bunch of stuff and other things are fucked up.
Yeah, I heard bad bug things.
Yeah. And so I was like, well, that's not what I'm looking for, you know?
Yeah.
So, another sort of like weirdly half their experience. Like I enjoyed it the first time, but I just didn't want to put up with it again.
That's fair enough. The second, oh, actually, I guess weird. Well, on that note, speaking of Rock Paper Shotgun, he is responding to someone who I guess wrote in bemoaning the lack of good PC game coverage. He recommends Rock Paper Shotgun. It's a good site that covers a broad spectrum of PC games.
It is.
It's new games journalism.
I agree. Well, I agree that it's a good site. I will not confirm nor deny allegations of new games journalism.
Yeah.
Well, it ought to be.
Yours in wizardry, David. Thanks.
Live from wizardry. Oh.
Wizardry 8. What's up, readers?
Someone's got to send something in.
Chris
Berg
writes, concerning Liquid, he says, after listening to some of my friends rave about Assassin's Creed 2, I found myself being concerned over whether or not I'd fallen into some kind of time warp. You see, it wasn't the new gameplay or graphics my friends are excited about. It was the fact that you could swim. Well, I didn't know that. Apparently you can swim in Assassin's Creed 2.
It takes place in Venice, right?
Yeah. He writes, maybe I didn't play enough of the original Assassin's Creed to understand the significance of this announcement, but I just don't understand why it's an announcement at all. After all these years of developers selling games based on sweet new water effects their game had, why is it so many games still overlook that mechanic? If you're not going to let players swim, how about don't put water in your game at all? Honestly, if the marketing department at Ubisoft had to spend even a little bit of time talking about a swim mechanic, there can't be much else in the game to sell. Anyway, I thought this was dumb and wanted to share with my favorite cast of Potters. He includes some potential IGN pull quotes from this. You'll swim so hard, your ass will implode. IGN.com. This game certainly doesn't use those kid rubber wing things because it's too busy ripping your face off in water. IGN.com. I like this. Michael Phelps isn't the only one that smokes pot. IGN.com.
What?
I enjoy the weird, like,
I'm going to finish these. Oh, I'm sorry.
Swim until your hometown is raped in a garbage disposal. IGN.com.
What?
Oh, man, this one's really good for people who actually remember what this is. Squids would swim if they were animals. IGN.com.
That's good. I approve of that.
I like that one. It would appear you can swim in this game. I find that to be an improvement over the previous game. IGN.com. Well done. All right.
The guy's main point.
You should swim in it.
Well, I mean, you would be equipped to answer this, Chris. I wouldn't
as an international swimming superstar.
Because
Michael Phelps.
It sounds like it may be a dumb point to make because were there even bodies of water you should have been able to swim in Assassin's Creed 1?
There were definitely waters of water you could die in Assassin's Creed. That's for goddamn sure.
Oh, really? You would fall in water and just die?
As I recall, that's what would happen.
Jesus. Yeah, like, so it's GTA 3 to GTA Vice City going on here, I guess.
Yeah, in those games you'd fall in water and you'd drown in the end.
But then Vice City, you could swim.
San Andreas, you could swim.
Yeah. Someone correct me if I'm wrong, but I have memories.
Well, anyway, yeah, it's
yeah.
You have memories of what?
I have memories of jumping on like little fucking pylons in the water and then falling off and dying.
Yeah,
that's
Assassin's Creed. I'm just saying, someone correct me if I'm wrong on that.
No, I don't think any of us are equipped to answer that because we didn't play far enough into the game.
I played pretty far. I just can't remember that game.
Oh, okay.
You just managed to not fall in the water.
No, I believe you, but
I can't remember.
But yeah, no, that's pretty weird.
It is fair enough that when your games reach a high enough level of sort of graphical and world fidelity, you probably shouldn't make water instantly kill you.
Yeah, I think that's completely
true.
If
your game is abstract, you can make that sort of, you know, I mean, that's a fair enough point.
Even within them, for example, in Hatsworth, there's a really aggravating...
Well, I mean, Hatsworth is a super stylized game.
Yeah, I know, but... Okay. Listen to what I'm saying. So in Hatsworth, water kills you, right? For world after world. Then you get these, I don't remember what they are, pants or feet or something. I don't know. You get some item that allows you to swim.
Zelda.
Yeah. And so at that point, you go through and there's like underwater levels and stuff, like sort of Sonic-esque underwater levels kind of. Except then, arbitrarily, sometimes water will kill you. Like later, like sometimes even after that point in the game, there are bodies of water where if you fall in them, you just die.
That sounds really cool.
So yeah, that's pretty awesome. I enjoyed how that worked.
I never really liked swimming in games.
Well, I prefer that to them it being blue lava.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I don't know.
You can't think of any game where you really like swimming?
Well, I'm trying to think. Not really.
Tomb Raider games?
I loaded up
Echo the Dolphin.
No.
No, Aquaria?
Nah.
Mario?
Nope.
Mario 1?
Yeah, like 2D? Come on, Nick. Yeah. All right, whatever. You're dumb.
I like side-scrollers when they're in water.
You could shoot fireballs underwater in Mario 1.
One exception for me. It's that whole genre.
Like, I like the Hatsworth part where you're in water. I just don't like when all of a sudden it kills you again for no reason.
Yeah.
Yeah, so blue lava.
Yeah, blue lava is bad. Light. If you're not going to allow the player to go in water, you should probably just, like, put a blocking volume around it, or not have water that's deeper than knee.
Right.
Depth. Or replace it with lava. No one will bat an eye.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was a VR simulation anyway, so
right. So maybe it was lava.
That's true.
It's dried out riverbed.
There. It's just like maybe it was Jerusalem,
spike.
Except
spikes, actually that was
yeah. It's spikes.
There's a minefield out there.
Right.
Swap
a spike lava mine.
Mine.
Acid.
Radioactive
green
goo.
Acid.
Yeah.
Dude, we've solved it.
It's a minefield filled with mines that shoot acid spikes when you touch them.
Made of lava.
Right.
Acid spikes made of lava?
Yeah.
Sweet.
And water. Because water also kills you in games.
Good times. All right. Fellow John writes, "Hi, Idle Thumbs."
Hey.
Hello.
Hey.
Hi, I'm Chris Remo.
I'm Nick Brecken. Oops. Jinx.
So he says, "I've been re-listening to the early episodes of Idle Thumbs.
Bad idea.
On his daily runs in order to get his ass into shape, and he's come to the conclusions that the Idle Thumbs Corporation should release a video game. He sees... he believes Idle Thumbs could cash in on the success of the Wii Fit board by making a video game that uses it.
Okay.
His vision is... The box art... his vision starts with the box art. The box art consists of Gandalf from Lord of the Rings casting a spell and Idle Thumbs flying out of his staff." All right.
Wait, you mean like the people? Well, I can't. The people on Idle Thumbs, or just like
the what?
No, the word.
Oh, the word Idle Thumbs.
Yeah, I think that's
not the people on.
I said the people on Idle Thumbs, such as Chris Ramo, Nick Brecken, and Jake Rodkin. It's a treant.
And then a Pesci-esque Hot Scoops in the corner.
Sure. Yeah, just sticking his head in there.
Hot Scoops included.
Yeah.
GameStop exclusive.
He proposes the gameplay to be a SingStar ripoff. You will play as a new member of the staff.
What is this guy, European?
And needs to quote lines from each episode in perfect pitch and work your way up to the legendary wizard rank.
Oh my god, this
famous
sounds
quotes,
like a...
Yeah, I know. Famous quotes such as IGN.com and
Wait,
the wizard.
Yeah.
I like that our famous quote is IGN.com.
This
can be recreated to the entertainment of the virtual crowd that works like the Rock Band crowd that cheers and joins in quotes. And then I can't show you this obviously, but there's a hilarious screenshot he includes of a guy wearing a hat, like singing classic. To a SingStar thing, and then the little like karaoke words at the bottom are "The Wizard." it's pretty hilarious.
Nice.
I'll show these guys individually here.
Oh. Is there anything more?
No, I think that's pretty much the game. Right.
Well, the interesting thing is that maybe kind of cool is that he has a unique opportunity, since I'm on this podcast, to have his design idea critiqued by a game designer on BioShock 2. Yeah. It sucks.
Oh,
jeez. That was just a joke.
But that it's was like the an icebox. What is this icebox? Is that corner? But yeah, what it actually reminds me of, and I don't know if I should even bother explaining this.
I was just joking.
Of our horrible.
Yeah, yeah. This is not like an original idea.
Yeah,
actually,
we had actually. Yeah, you're actually ripping off the already proposed internal design for the Idle Thumbs video game, which
really?
Involved. We were talking about hack. You know how you can hack a copy of Guitar Hero 2 on the PlayStation and put in your own tracks?
Yeah, I've seen that.
We were talking about just having the actual. Gems be a crazy fucking hard song.
Yeah.
We were going to use Rock Band was the idea, and each of the four tracks would just be us talking through a regular podcast, but you had to play along to, like, whatever, the gems from a Bowie song, and you had no idea what was going on, except that we would stop talking if you were screwing up. So, like, the drummer would be controlling Chris, right, and then someone just goes, if you fuck up. So that was our gold idea, is just to make the most horrible things. You just hear the sort of clacking and pounding of Rock Band instruments in a room, and then
like
four dorks talking. Right,
you feel like the actual levels, so to speak, would actually be from a real song. So you'd still hear the drums sounding like that, like clack, 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 clack.
Yeah, and you hear the guitar going, and then it's over your TV, and you just want to go, the wizard. And it would be a really horrible game.
IGN.ka-chink.
I like the idea that the ka-chinks are translated to baboos.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's. This is a fucking weird episode of this podcast.
It's all thanks to our wonderful readers.
This is us getting all this stupid stuff out of the way.
Yeah, all right. Anyway, moving on.
I liked your joke in actuality.
Well, I mean, we're using the reader mail that I always forget to answer as a vehicle for us just barfing out all the stuff we usually don't talk about.
Oh, I see.
So
I see what you mean now.
Twitter subscribers and it's RSS subscribers dropping like flies.
Yeah. Tony Gregerson writes
into the spikes.
This is a follow up to our idol. To our, I'm sorry. To our
idol films.
to our puffins.
It's a follow up to our puffins. It's a follow up to the Jay Allard rumor that we presented several weeks ago, a couple months ago, maybe at this point.
Last year.
Rumor.
Remind
mongers.
Me I may have already read this and I've just forgotten, but I don't think so.
Nah. What? Is somebody going to call in?
Well, I mean, you guys here. Tony Gregerson writes. Dear Idle Thumbs, I recently had the pleasure of having dinner and drinks with a senior member of Microsoft Research. Over the course of conversation, someone made a joke regarding orgies, as is wont to happen in such situations.
You might
naturally,
have read this.
Oh, I did?
I don't remember. Let's just go with it.
Okay. Sorry if I did to anyone. Naturally, this caused me to recall a recent episode of the Idle Thumbs podcast in which you relayed a rumor that Jay Allard's sudden departure from prominence in the Xbox 360 division, I think I did read this, was the result of a sexual harassment suit stemming from an internal Microsoft sex club. I recounted this rumor of Allard's sexual adventures to my companion and asked him if he could deny knowledge of the events. Upon hearing this, a strange look passed over his face. He coughed theatrically and immediately changed the subject. Confirmed? ? Your faithful servant, Tony G.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice to meet you.
That was good. Yeah. I enjoyed that confirmation.
Confirmed with a question mark.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I don't know if we had anything else, but...
Maybe we should do some reader mail?
Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah. I guess that's it for this week. So if you do have any questions and you want us to talk about them in the last 15 minutes of our regular episodes, just write to questions@idlethumbs.net. We accept what is game or longer questions.
Yeah, make them a little bit shorter than long. Make them like... low to medium length. You can interpret what that means, but yeah.
It's a grande length.
Also, we've already received all the emails that say what is game, and you don't actually have to write it in anymore.
But feel free. We may not read them. Bye! Because I'm the motherfucking wizard!
The Wizard.
It's May 6th, 2008.
And this is Idle Thumbs 28. Shit!
Well, it's also not 2008. You fuck.
It reminds me of a Namco event.
It's like, May 6th, 1742.
And this is Idle Thumbs 27. And I'm Chris Remo.
I'm Nick Bracken.
I'm Jake.
And we are here joined today by Steve Hot Scoop Skainer, who's our best friend.
Who? Me?
Yep. You, Steve!
Hi,
I'm hey. Steve.
I'm Steve.
How's it going?
Good.
Video game.
Jesus. Thanks, guys.
What a weird episode.
Yeah.
What a weird fucked up episode. That
well, was. You're weird, so it made the episode weird.
I'm fine with that. Yeah. I'm fine with that episode, but Jesus, what a crazy episode.
Yeah, I know.
Was it really crazy?
It was pretty weird.